is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Trump's first year with Simon Marks.
Welcome to the second hour of our special programme from Washington. I'm Simon Marks, LBC's US correspondent, looking back at a roller coaster year here in the US Capitol. And if it was tough for all of us to keep up with the hurricane of activity at the White House, imagine what it was like for the three men who now find themselves very much at the centre of President Trump's orbit, or perhaps in the eye of President Trump's storm. It is apparent that Donald Trump likes military generals, so much so that three of them now occupy absolutely pivotal positions within his White House. In July, General John Kelly was brought in as President Trump's new chief of staff, tasked with bringing order and discipline to a White House that up until then had exhibited neither. Also serving the president, General H.R. McMaster, who became his national security advisor after the firing of the Russia-tarnished and disgraced General Michael Flynn. And making up the troika, the mad dog, General James Mattis, who, as the president's defense secretary, has turned out not to be that much of a mad dog after all. So why are these three men each agreeing to serve Donald Trump in the White House? With me now to explore that, one of Washington's preeminent observers, Susan Glasser, the chief international affairs columnist with Politico. And Susan, thanks very much indeed for joining us on the program. What's up here? I understand why the president wanted the generals, but why did the generals want the president?
Well, look, it's a good question, and it's one that is really an endless subject of Washington parlor game guessing, really, over the course of last year. But there is a difference between not all generals are created equal at this point in time. Remember that H.R. McMaster, the national security advisor, is a three-star general, but he's a current general. That means he received an order, in effect, from his commander-in-chief. So he would have had a much harder time, really, demurring, even if he didn't really want to serve as national security advisor, and no one thinks this was a job that he was sitting around bucking for, but he remains a sitting general while also serving in that post. Whereas Generals Mattis and Kelly, the White House Chief of Staff, General Kelly, and the Defense Secretary, are both retired generals; they're former generals, and so they certainly had more leeway to choose. But again, I don't think anyone thinks that either of them was desperate to serve Donald Trump either.
So let's break it down, because you're absolutely right. They're not monolithic. And let's take a look at these men individually, starting out with General Kelly. He was brought in as the new White House chief of staff to clean the place up, bring order to chaos. At the end of the year, how do you think he's doing?
Well, look, it's a good reminder that effective staff work is only as effective on some level as the boss. And Donald Trump is ending his first year in office as the most unpopular first-year president that we've had in modern times in the United States, on the one hand. On the other hand, by all accounts, the processes in the West Wing, the actual functions of staffing the White House have clearly improved, settled into something that is much more recognizably the American White House than it was in the chaotic early days surrounding Trump's presidency. And I think we've learned a lot about General Kelly as well in the course of the last 6 months. One of the things that I increasingly hear from people here in Washington is them making a distinction between General Kelly and Mattis and McMaster, and viewing Kelly as more of someone who seems to share some of Donald Trump's political beliefs.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I was going to take us back in time a little bit to one of General Kelly's briefings for reporters, because for a long while, it seemed that no one in Washington really had an appreciation or an understanding of General Kelly's own politics. But then he spoke to reporters in the aftermath of claims by the widow of a slain soldier that Donald Trump, in a presidential phone call of condolence, had told her that her husband knew what he was signing up for. The conversation was reported by a congresswoman who was listening to the call, and it elicited this response from General Kelly.
It stuns me that a member of Congress would have listened in on that conversation. Absolutely stuns me. And I thought, at least that was sacred. You know, when I was a kid growing up, a lot of things were sacred in our country. women were sacred and looked upon with great honor. That's obviously not the case anymore, as we see from recent cases. Life, the dignity of life, was sacred. That's gone. Religion, that seems to be gone as well. Gold Star families, I think that left in the convention over the summer. But I just thought the selfless devotion that brings a man or woman to die on the battlefield, I just thought that that might be sacred.
Susan Glass, a real fury there on the part of General Kelly, who of course himself lost a son on the battlefield, but it's also pretty revealing of his own political outlook, isn't it?
Well, that's right. Look, I'm glad it's powerful to hear the whole thing again in full. I think it is arguably sort of the moment when John Kelly became political and stepped out in front of a broad national audience and made it clear in some way that we had not fully understood until then how on board he is with the Trump presidency. And, you know, look, I got to say, right, it's pretty rich to hear General Kelly lecturing Americans about the lack of sacredness while serving a president who's brought, you know, the most crude standards, unimaginably crude standards, to the White House and, you know, attacking those same Gold Star families that General Kelly claims to venerate. So it's shocking all around. Many people were surprised that he didn't apologize after this to the family, especially in light of what we now know about the horrific way in which that young man apparently died in the attack. And so it's a sad episode all around, but I think you're right to point out that it was a revealing one.
And also General Kelly, who many people thought might finally come to grips with Donald Trump's Twitter habit, has recently said of the president's tweets, they are what they are. Does that mean he's given up?
Well, again, I'm glad you spotlighted this. This is something we hear from General Kelly and increasingly from others who serve the president, including those on his national security team. I find this to be one of the most jarring aspects of the Trump presidency at the end of 1 year, this notion that somehow everything is just fine. We have a great national security, for example, strategy. If only we just ignore the president and whether he himself actually agrees to it. And, you know, initially, right, they said ignore the Twitter stream. Now, of course, they realize Trump has actually affected real-world events with it, foreign governments, everybody's wise to the fact that this actually represents the undiluted thought stream, the id, if you will, of the President of the United States, so we're not going to ignore it. So now they don't say ignore it, but effectively they say don't elevate its importance, look at what we do, not what he says. And I find that to be the emerging kind of head snapping. It's kind of like the cognitive dissonance of the Trump presidency.
So let's turn to General H.R. McMaster. You mentioned him before, the National Security Advisor. He is a serving member of the military. And when Donald Trump asked him to head the National Security Council, as you pointed out, he snapped to attention and said yes. He came in highly respected. He literally wrote the book on when the military has to tell uncomfortable truths to politicians in power. And yet here was General McMaster carrying President Trump's water and accusing the Washington Post of fake news when it revealed earlier this year that the president had disclosed classified intelligence to the Russians during an Oval Office meeting.
There's nothing that the president takes more seriously than the security of the American people. The story that came out tonight, as reported, is false. At no time, were intelligence sources or methods discussed. And the president did not disclose any military operations that were not already publicly known. And I was in the room. It didn't happen.
Susan Glasser, he was in the room, says it didn't happen, except with the benefit of hindsight, we all now know that it did.
Well, that's right. It seemed like, at a minimum, a lot of angels dancing on the head of a pin and hair splitting of a legalistic sort going into that answer. And disingenuous is the very best case interpretation of that comment you just played from General McMaster. You know, no one really knows, obviously, what's inside the heads of these folks at this point in time. I have a friend here in Washington, Tom Wright. He's from the Brookings Institution. He's emerged as sort of an astute Trump whisperer, if you will, on foreign policy. he and I were talking about this very dilemma the other day. How do we understand what's going on with General McMaster, highly respected, as you pointed out, in all these circles? He said it reminds him of the movie Donnie Brasco. I don't know if you remember that, but it's basically a film involving an FBI effort to place an informant deeply undercover inside the mafia. And, of course, to really gain credibility in the mafia, Donnie Brasco is required to do all sorts of very heinous things. And, you know, his old colleagues are left wondering. He seems to be such a good mafioso, in fact, they're left wondering whether he's really still on the good guys' team. And that kind of sums up a lot of the speculating about General McMaster now.
And what's your thought? How badly tarnished is someone like H.R. McMaster? Because it's not normal or usual for military figures to be dragged into political battles, and they don't normally like it.
Look, I think that it's impossible to answer that question yet because we don't know how the story ends. And, of course, we don't know what General McMaster will ultimately end up doing. And, you know, the scenario where he, you know, quits in a blaze of outrage is a very different scenario than the one where he goes down with the ship and is revealed to be, you know, a true America First believer. You know, we don't know. We just don't know the ending of the story yet. I think most people believe that McMaster is a genuinely principled person and who has committed his life to serve his country. And so let's go with that.
All right. Well, the final chapter of his story is yet to be written. So too the final chapter of the story of James Mattis, the defense secretary. Here's something that he said earlier this year to a group of troops when he was visiting the Middle East.
He says, hold the line until our country gets back to understanding and respecting each other and showing it, being friendly to one another. You know, that Americans owe to one another. We're so doggone lucky to be Americans.
Hold the line until our country gets back to normal was essentially General Mattis's message there. Susan Glasser, he was hardly blowing the bugle for President Trump there.
No, look, I mean, by all accounts, you know, there's certainly a sense among what I would call the Washington establishment, for lack of a better phrase, in both parties, that sees General Mattis as really the sort of cornerstone at this point, the bedrock of American and therefore global national security. He's emerged with the fewest Trumpian scars after 1 year. Trump still appears to respect him and to be perhaps even a bit intimidated by him. And, you know, he has not done some of the over-the-top acts of sycophantism that you've seen from some of the others.
I was told by one visiting defense minister here this year that General Mattis walked into the room and introduced himself as the Secretary for Reassurance. what is the thinking in Washington about these guys as the year ends? Are they, as many people I think initially hoped and argued, are they going to be the men who throw themselves, if necessary, between President Donald Trump and the nuclear button? Or might they, under certain circumstances, guide him towards it and actually help him use it?
You know, again, this is the subject of so much debate and discussion here in Washington this year. By the way, that in and of itself, of course, is completely unprecedented and a sign of this extraordinary time that we're living in. There was this sort of adults in the room theory of the case, right? That's tempered after a year. It's been clear that Donald Trump, especially when domestic politics or his campaign season promises get in the way, is willing and, in fact, has on multiple occasions overruled General Mattis as well as General McMaster and, of course, his beleaguered Secretary of State Rex Tillerson on various important foreign policy issues, including, I'm told most recently, just the decision on recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Both Mattis and Tillerson, I was told, begged. That was the word, begged the president not to do it. He did it anyways. So Mattis is not an absolute fail-safe bulwark against presidential decision-making in a system which endows the president himself with these powers and not his advisors, you know? And we've learned that. Donald Trump doesn't want to be anybody's puppet, and in fact, I'm sure nothing outrages him more than the idea that we all think that these people are puppeting him around like a marionette.
Absolutely. Susan Glasser, she's the chief international columnist with Politico. You can read her terrific writings at politico.com and listen to her podcast, The Global Politico. Every week, it offers tremendous insights into what's going on here. Susan Glasser, thanks very much indeed for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Next, we're going back in time.
George Bush began his victory speech the way such speeches always begin.
I've just received a telephone call from Governor Dukakis.
Voices who covered Washington in the past on LBC with their views of what's going on here today. Plus, Nigel Farage. Did he ever mention that he knows Donald Trump? And our special roundtable with the Brits. That's all ahead on LBC.
Christmas on LBC.